What is the vision for Alaska's economic and resource future? Keep all of our eggs in the fossil fuels basket? Find new revenue sources? The state has seen more than a couple boom and bust cycles, but oil prices aren't likely to shoot up for a long time, and it doesn't look like the price for LNG will pencil out for an Alaska gas line in the near future. So what's the answer? Is there a more environmentally friendly direction to move in that could keep the economy robust? The way forward for Alaska's financial health is our discussion today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
BP. BP believes that Alaskans know their state best and invests in recruiting and hiring from their own backyard. 78% of the BP employees who work here live in Alaska. BP.com/Alaska. If you're a single person who makes less than $60,240 per year, you're eligible for federal tax credits to help pay health insurance premium costs. If you need health insurance for 2018, there's a limited window to act. Open enrollment for 2018 plans is from November 1st through December 15th of 2017. If you don't have coverage, it could be financially devastating. Sign up at healthcare.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. Last month, Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Andy Mack was on Talk of Alaska. He said companies are interested in the 1002 area of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, ANWR. Opening this area has long been a desire of Alaska's congressional delegation as well as state leaders. Opening it is in the Senate tax plan, but not in the House version. We'll explore that and other areas of potential interest today with our guests. Kara Moriarty is the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. And Lois Epstein. Lois is the Arctic Program Director for the Wilderness Society. Hello.
Hello. Thanks, Lori.
Thanks so much for being here. You, Alaskans, can also join our discussion. What do you think Alaska's future should be to find fiscal stability, provide jobs, while also taking care of the environment here? Are there new ideas in your region? Give us a call, 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. There's a lot to talk about with ANWR and other things, but this morning there was a story in the Anchorage Daily News. It's the Anchorage Daily News again. About ASRC Energy Services laying off some workers because Hillcorp is terminating their contract in three fields. Hillcorp will likely hire another contractor. Maybe these people will get rehired. So is this significant? How do you read this, Kara? There's definitely been a big decline in North Slope jobs. Do you think that's going to continue?
Well, I think it's, first of all, again, good morning and thank you for having me. I think it's a reflection that in this price environment, companies are continuing to find any savings that they can. And it's my understanding that jobs will not necessarily be lost, that Hillcorp's not reducing its workforce. It's just using a contractor that may be able to provide the work a little bit more efficiently and more economically. So I actually visited with Hillcorp this morning about that, and they said that there won't be less workers for them. It will just be under a different contract. So if AES is restructuring because the loss of that contract, that's something that they may be doing, but the same level of employment to do that work is expected to remain the same for Hillcorp.
Do you think longer term, what there's been a big shedding of jobs? Is it kind of shaking out now, leveling off, or what does it look like?
Yes, there has been several thousand jobs lost on the North Slope over the last several years. When you have a huge price decline, the companies just don't have as much money to spend. And so, they do try to find ways to be more efficient. in that process, as in any business, when they have a loss of revenue. Restaurants do the same thing. Hospitals do the same thing. It's no different in the oil and gas industry. So I think, forecasts show that these prices are going to stay in this 50 to 60 range for a while. Those are publicly available forecasts. And, you know, so companies have to figure out how can they reliably, safely, and economically continue to develop oil and gas in this price range. And so it's just the reality of the situation that we have today.
And Lois Epstein, what's your reading of the tea leaves here? Is this just business that, business decisions, or do you think it harkens something that's longer term, response to other concerns? How do you see this?
Well, I agree with Cara that the price is likely to remain in the lower part of the range, and Arctic oil operations are very expensive compared to other places, and that does make drilling in the Arctic, in order to ensure the safety and reliability and environmental protection, challenging because the low prices mean that it's going to be harder to continue operations in that manner.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are talking about Alaska's resource future. What's the way forward? What should we focus on? Is it more oil and gas? Are there other things on the horizon that might be a different direction for the state to go in? You can join our conversation at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. In Anchorage, it's 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us talk@alaskapublic.org. Let's go to the phones. Joseph is in Petersburg. Hello.
Yeah, hi, good morning to the panel there, and happy to be with you this morning. I had a question for the industry person, Tara, I believe her name was, about the methane capture. President Obama signed executive order requiring oil producers in the United States to capture their methane and pump it back into the ground. Mr. Trump revoked that order in another executive action, allowing the oil companies just to release all this methane into the atmosphere. There are some sources who believe that this released methane from oil production is the biggest contributor to global warming on the planet. I wanted to ask the industry representative, how is drilling being conducted in Alaska? Are they going to capture their methane and pump it back into the earth, or are they going to try to save a few pennies on the dollar and just release it into the atmosphere and business as usual? Before I let her answer that question, though, I also want to comment on the recent attack on the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge by Lisa Murkowski. And this was an extremely disheartening move. The whole world, not just this nation, the whole world is on the brink of change for global warming and climate change. Just irrefutable proofs every year, sometimes more than one a week, with massive tropical storms and flooding and ice breakup and permafrost melt and no Arctic Ocean ice and on and on and on.
So you're not a fan of opening ANWR?
We're going backwards in this game, and we need to stop digging the hole deeper and move backwards. Unfortunately, a move like this almost removes any hope of gaining any ground towards moving back to an earth we can actually be allowed to live on. So I'd also like the guests to comment on that as well.
Okay, and, thanks. Thanks, Joseph. Let's take the first question first. He had a question about capturing methane.
Correct. So, Joseph, my name is Kara, and thank you for calling in. A couple of things. We do reinject as much as we can back into the ground for it actually helps enhance production.
Pressurizes the fields.
Yep, it enhances oil production. We have a very low level of release in Alaska, and that's regulated by the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. And those offtake limits are regulated very, very seriously. I just want to comment, though, that, you know, if you look at our overall carbon emissions in America, and I'm pulling up some statistics, I'm going to read from my phone here. Our emissions in 2016 fell to the same level as the nation's carbon emissions in 1991. And it wasn't necessarily due in large part to regulations or less production. In fact, production's actually grown over that same time frame. And so I think, you know, as we look, you know, industry is usually some of the biggest leaders in finding more innovative and more clean ways to produce energy. The global demand still exists for oil and gas. And just because we're in a low price environment, I don't think it means that we are going to cut corners on safety or environmental protections or regulation, because that's always of our most paramount concern. So I continue to contend that we operate in a very regulated, Alaska is probably one of the most regulated areas in the U.S. and on the globe, and we continue to provide a source of energy for both Alaskans and America.
All right. Before we move on to the ANWR part of Joseph's question, Lois, I want to give you a chance to respond to these concerns.
Thank you. And thank you, Joseph. Actually, respectfully, the amount of methane emissions that are coming out of oil and gas wells on the North Slope are not trivial by any means. Those numbers are known by the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. There are some reasons there might be some quick releases, but there is a record of quite a bit of flaring and venting going on. It may be a lot less than what is injected, but it is still significant. And that's something that the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission has under its authority to make sure is reduced to the minimum level possible. We all know that we can have improvements, and this is absolutely one of them. We've done that with the Cook Inlet releases. It used to be something AOGCC worked on, ensuring that there was a lot less flaring. People on the hillside were able to see those flares. What's going on the North Slope is not always visible to many people. So that's an important point. And it is true that there is an effort being made nationally to pull back from some of these very sensible rules. And in terms of the federal lands, like in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, when we see venting, flaring, loss of methane, those are federal resources and federal dollars that the federal government is not getting because it's being wasted by the industry. That's what it's called. It's actually called waste. And when that's done on state lands, same thing. Those are state resources and ultimately state dollars when we start using that natural gas.
Unless you want to follow up, I'd like to move on to ANWR. But
sure. Just as a quick follow up, and then I'll just go right into ANWR, if that's okay. I mean, the reality is there is venting and flaring in Alaska, but I think it is regulated by AOGCC. They are tasked to make sure it is the least amount of venting and flaring. You will always have venting and flaring. It is not safe otherwise. And so that's why it's regulated. That's why it's a very minimal amount compared to the overall production. And that is something that I can assure you AOGCC regulates very closely and is something that they are on top of every single day. As far as the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and the coastal plain, you know, the coastal plain, the 1002 area, and the reason it's called 1002, I actually had an interview with the New Mexico public TV a few weeks ago, and they asked me, they said, why is it 1002? Is it because there's 1,002 acres, or why is it called that? And I said, well, really, it's because that's the section of ANILCA that was passed in 1980 that specifically designated the coastal plain for future oil and gas development. That was the trade-off. That was the compromise. A lot of people refer to it as the no more clause and no more wilderness, because that was the deal that was struck. And of course, we do need congressional approval before a lease sale can occur. And so the Energy Committee was instructed to come up with revenue to offset the federal tax cuts. And I think it's important for listeners to remember that what is in the tax reform plan is not a plan to approve drilling. So if the measure provision makes it through the conference committee.
Because it's in the Senate bill. It's not in the House bill.
Right. So it will have to be negotiated.
Congressman Don Young is on that conference committee.
It's still not a guarantee I've no Congressman Young will fight very hard for that from Fort Yukon to make that happen. But I think it's important to remember that if it survives conference, we as industry cannot start drilling immediately. That what is instructed is that the Department of Interior will have to set up two lease sales in a 10-year period. And as Lois knows, those lease sales don't happen overnight as well. There's a whole public process before the lease sale is heard. Then the lease sale occurs. There's a public comment period around that. So this won't happen overnight, and it will be done in the same very responsible, diligent manner that any lease sale occurs, whether it's in MPRA, like we have one tomorrow. There's a lease sale in MPRA tomorrow, and any future lease sales and any other federal land like the Outer Continental Shelf.
Lois, what if the ANWR provision survives the conference committee and stays in? What legal and technical challenges will there be, potential barriers?
Lori, I actually think it's important to begin from the beginning and talk about why the Arctic Refuge is an important place to preserve. It is the crown jewel of the nation's National Wildlife Refuge System. It has been protected for 40 years. Congress and different administrations have decided that it needs to be retained as wilderness. The coastal plain is very narrow there. It's unlike further west where we've had development. So it's incredibly sensitive because the caribou that give birth there do so to avoid insects and predators. So if we're talking about industrialization across the coastal plain, which is what we are talking about, the 2,000-acre myth is something that has been thrown out there that only 2,000 acres are going to be affected. They're not in one place. It would be a spider web of development. The reality is the coastal plain, should it get through the tax committee, it would be a radical change in the country's decision making in terms of what it does to protect refuges, not just in Alaska, but elsewhere. This place is on the level of Yellowstone, Grand Canyon. We're not going to be drilling in Denali. We shouldn't be drilling in the Arctic Refuge. So this is a line in the sand in terms of where we have a special place. And Alaskans and folks in the lower 48, by a large majority in the lower 48, oppose oil development in the refuge. Alaskans are more mixed, but we all recognize that some places are different than others. So the question about whether you can do it safely or not is not really where I think we should be having this discussion. And Senator Cantwell, who's the ranking member on the Senate Environment and Natural Resource Committee, said it very well a few weeks ago when she said, if you're going to drill in a refuge, if you're going to destroy a refuge, just say that.
And Lois, I can't let that go. I mean, no one has ever said we are going to destroy the 19.5 million acre refuge. And to suggest that is one of the biggest hyperboles I've heard in this whole discussion. The reality is over 70% of Alaskans, those of us who live here and raise our families here, strongly support having this very small section of the 19.5 million acre refuge available for future oil and gas development. The residents who live in ANWR support this measure. And I think it is not, the coastal plain of ANWR is not the same as Yellowstone. It is not the same that you will not have the pictures that are often used in this debate are of the Brooks Range, are of the mountains in Anwar. They're not of the coastal plain. So I just want to, you know, Lois and I will never agree on this issue, but I just think to suggest that we are going to destroy the whole refuge by allowing drilling in the coastal plain cannot go unnoticed, because I just firmly disagree with that. If you look to the east of the coastal plain, the development on the North Slope has not destroyed the North Slope. Development in MPRA has not destroyed the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, and drilling in the coastal plain will not destroy the refuge.
Let's go to the phones for a moment. Ben is in Sitka and has a comment about Anwar and fracking.
Hey, yeah. I'm just calling. I have some concerns. I'm not aware exactly to what extent Alaska is fracking. I know that that's happening in parts of Cook Inlet right now, but I've heard within these provisions and in these plans, and maybe someone could correct me if I'm wrong, that fracking is going to be one of the new methods, you know, being used in this development. And obviously, I think there are a lot of concerns to be addressed in that. Down south, you know, in Ohio, in 1 month, there's 77 earthquakes, you know, and the potential groundwater contamination from the fracking fluids. And given all, to me, it just seems incredibly, the risks seem so incredible for such a valuable resource and for such valuable pristine wilderness and water, and even the oil itself. Just in my opinion, it seems like given the price of oil and the climate right now, it does not make sense to me as an Alaskan. I know some people would oppose that idea, but to me, it doesn't make sense. When you do a cost benefit analysis, it seems like the rest of the world, I mean, I think France, the Netherlands, Scotland, other countries, and I think New York and Maryland have put moratoriums on fracking because the research is still there. You know, there's arguments going on, but there's a lot of science that says that it's pointing to really extreme risks for this type of extraction.
Okay, so let's find out if let our guests weigh in here and find out if that's what's on the horizon. First of all, thank you, Ben, for the call. And what companies have specifically expressed interest in Anwar, and is fracking on that agenda?
So I'll answer the question around hydraulic fracturing. Hydraulic fracturing has been utilized in Alaska for over 50 years without incident. It's happening today in Cook Inlet. It's happening today on the North Slope. And especially for some of these fields that may not have as much oil and gas. So, for example, Ugric, the first independently operated oil and gas field in Alaska, the way the oil is there, if you were not able to utilize hydraulic fracturing, you would not have the 10 to 15,000 barrels a day production. It just wouldn't be possible without utilizing the technology of hydraulic fracturing. So it's a very little known fact that we've been using that technology. Even though we haven't had any incident, AOGCC is the agency, again, that regulates our operations. And they put forward a set of increased regulation, oversight, notification for landowners, especially in Cook Inlet, where that's kind of an issue, where there's actually residents that live closer to those operations. Arguably, we have some of the most stringent hydraulic fracturing regulations now in the country. They were actually modeled after Australia's. Actually, AOGCC just put out some modifications to those last week. I will be honest, I have not read them all the way yet, so I'm not exactly sure what all they do.
But to Ben's question, is that, do you think that that's the type of development that would be used in Anwar, or is that not known yet?
It's not known, but again, it's happening today. So, and as far as companies that have specifically expressed interest in participating in a lease sale, companies don't share that with me. If they're going to participate in a lease sale or not, I can't tell you who's going to show up at MPRA lease sale tomorrow. But they have long supported access in that area, in the 1002 area, just like they do in other federal lands.
Lois, fracking.
So I think we could have a whole show just on fracking and the issues associated with it. But there are also some reasons to think that some fracking in conventional wells makes sense in Alaska. To completely dismiss the concerns doesn't make sense because it is misleading to say it's been going on for 40 years, because the kind of fracking that is being done, certainly in the lower 48, has different geology, uses much, much more water. That is a concern in Cook Inlet when fresh water is being used, which is limited on the peninsula. So that's one whole topic. But in terms of the Arctic Refuge, the question isn't really can it be done without impact, because it is going to have impact. It is a serious development. There's going to be air pollution, noise, gravel, mining, blasts to get that gravel, potentially blowouts like we just had on the North Slope. BP did, after operating for decades, their well had a blowout. We had to bring in outside contractors to address that. AOGCC is looking at all the wells to see if the same sorts of problem are going to be occurring, because it's been determined it was related to thawing permafrost. Loss of habitat. And just to respond to Cara's point about it being inappropriate to say the refuge is going to be destroyed, I was not saying the whole refuge. I was saying the coastal plain wood, and that is the biological heart. It is where the very large porcupine caribou herd gives birth. They migrate throughout the refuge. If you have problems in the coastal plain, you're going to have problems elsewhere. And not to neglect the issue, the Gwich'in people rely on these caribou. There are protections in Canada for these caribou that don't exist here. So it is an incredibly important piece of the refuge. So I hope my words aren't being mischaracterized.
Let's go back to the phones for a moment. We have calls stacking up, and we're going to have to take a break here soon. But Catherine is in Juneau. Hi, Catherine.
Good morning, Lori. Thanks for having this. Because for me, the decision by Senator Murkowski to put the National Arctic Wildlife Range into the tax bill was really discouraging and upsetting. As has been pointed out, the refuge is old. It's been in existence for a long time, and people all over the United States have supported the Arctic Refuge, the National Arctic Wildlife Refuge. I refuse to call it ANWR because they realized how important this place is, not only for the caribou, which is the last large migration of animals left on the planet. This place is comparable to the Serengeti. And these large animal migrations, which did once exist on our in North America, do not exist anymore except in ANWR. So I was really disappointed in her position on this. I thought it was very much in contradiction to her saying anything about global warming, which she has finally said she believes exists. But the other issue that I keep hearing is that this isn't really going to harm the refuge if development on the coastal plain takes place. And people have to remember that the compromise on the coastal plain took place in 1980. And it was a time when Senator Stevens and Senator Murkowski and the people who were making the decisions in the conference committee about the coastal plain were very much in favor of seeing oil development anywhere in Alaska. And so it's, you know, and they were very heavily funded by the oil industry. Donations that, you know, basically these Congress people were heavily funded by the industry. The other issue is just that we need to keep the earth from getting hotter. And if the position that the oil industry is taking, that it's okay to continue to explore and bring more oil out of the ground because we need it, is just simply not correct.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. We're going to have to take a break. I appreciate your thoughts on this. Clearly, you're not in favor of ANWR. Before we go to the break, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I have an email question about ANWR and opening ANWR. As Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The U.S. Bureau of Land Management, the lead federal agency, is hosting a series of public scoping meetings on the proposed Ambler Road. The meetings are now through Tuesday, December 12th, in several communities near the Ambler Mining District. The BLM is developing an environmental impact statement and seeking public input. Learn more at blm.gov/AmblerRoadEIS. This message is sponsored by BLM.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing Alaska's fiscal future prospects, oil and gas, other things in the mix. And we've been talking about ANWR with today's guest. Kara Moriarty is the president and CEO of Alaska Oil and Gas Association. She's in the studio, as well as Lois Epstein, who is the Arctic Program Director for the Wilderness Society. There was an email question that came in about that number that you cited, Kara, 70% of Alaskans. This is from Marissa in Kodiak, who says, I'm wondering if your interviewee would please cite her source for her statistic. I'd like to know how they interviewed Alaskans to arrive at the number of 70% supporting drilling.
So that's a it's a long-term track question that Dittman Research has been doing for the last 25 years, probably. And so you would need to ask Dittman how they ask the question.
But that's where the number's coming from.
Right. It's okay. It's a publicly released number that Dittman Research usually releases. And in full disclosure, sometimes those that poll has been paid for by us. Sometimes it's been paid for by other organizations that I don't know who they are, because we don't ask that question every year, because we don't poll every year. I can speak to our polling. Sometimes that's 600 to 1,000 Alaskans, kind of depending on how much money we have to pay for the poll at the time. But Dittman would be the person who has the long track.
All right. There's your answer, Marissa in Kodiak. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. We have a lot of calls stacked up. Jeff is in Anchor Point. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Lori. A point to make on this fracking is what's the definition of incident, and how about the timeline? It might be somebody's grandchildren that pays for like the earthquake pushing, and I'm thinking of Cook Inlet close to home here, that pushes that toxic fluid back up and kills off the sockeye that Pebble doesn't get. Thank you.
So I think incident is, this is Kara, I think incident is measured if there's a release of oil or contamination of any water source. And to my knowledge, fracking in Cook Inlet has not caused either of those two things to happen or occur.
Let's move on to the sale that's happening tomorrow. There's
sure.
A lease sale that will be happening, a federal and state lease sale. One, the BLM will offer about half of the NPRA, all that's available. This seems somewhat unusual because I think generally the lease sales are sort of in response to what the industry shows interest in. Would that be correct to say?
No, not necessarily. Lease sales, especially state lease sales, are on a regular schedule. They happen twice a year. They're called area-wide lease sales. And the industry does have to express interest that they're going to show up and participate. So for example, is it 2 years ago now? I think the lease sale in Cook Inlet did not occur because it was scheduled to occur, but there was no preliminary interest expressed by industry. Prices were very low at the time. And so the lease sale didn't occur because there wasn't a level of interest expressed. But lease sales are scheduled on a fairly regular basis on state land and then as designated by the agencies on federal land.
The NPRA, about half is been opened up. Lois, your take on that.
That's right. The plan that was issued based on an enormous amount of scientific input, which protected the ecologically important parts of the NPRA, that
still
whole region.
Limits.
Opened about half the NPRA to oil and gas development, and that is what is being offered tomorrow. What's notable is it's about seven times more land being offered for leasing than was last year offered for leasing. So it is opening up every single inch of the NPRA.
But does that matter? I mean, are there going to be lease sales in all those?
Well, let me speak to that a little bit, because it is possible when the parts that don't have oil don't get leases, there's going to be an effort to open up the areas that are ecologically sensitive, like the Teshupuk Lake region, saying that, well, you know, guess what? The industry doesn't want all the land, but they want the land that's closed right now. And so that's going to make a big difference. And notably, you know, when the plan came out, you know, there's language in Alaska that everything the federal government does that's bad. The state did not even sue on the plan. It was a solid piece of work that identified what areas are important. And now there's an effort by the Trump administration and by others in state to reopen that plan. The plan is working. The half that was open represented at the time 72% of the oil and gas resources. ConocoPhillips is moving forward with operations in the areas that are open. That is not something that's a bad thing, because the protected areas are kept off limits.
And the DNR commissioner did say it should stay that way, that Teshupuk Lake should stay off limits.
Very carefully, he said Teshupuk Lake, not the Teshupuk Lake special area, which is the land around the lake, which is also very, very critical for the wildlife, for birds that go all around the world, they come to Alaska to breed. And there's also a Teshupuk Lake caribou herd. And you have the community of New Ixit, very close to the reserve. And they use that area for subsistence.
Kara, I'd like to go back to the phones, but before we do, your thoughts on the Teshupuk Lake area. Should it stay off limits? It seems that there is potential for oil in that area. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, of course, there's areas around the lake that have some of the most high prospectivity areas remaining for available for lease. And so if they're offered for lease, we believe that if we received a lease in that area, we would have mitigation measures and to protect the wildlife around us. I mean, that occurs today. We make special modifications for polar bear dens, for caribou breeding, for caribou crossings, to suggest that we wouldn't take care of wildlife or whatnot. It's just not how we operate. The industry spends more on research on wildlife than anyone else on the North Slope today, because we want to know migration patterns, breeding patterns, so that we can coexist. And we work very closely with the village of New Ixit and the Native Corporation of New Ixit to continue to allow for their subsistence hunts.
Let's go to the phones. Mike is in Kodiak. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thanks to the two speakers that are there. I think the discussion is really good. I have a number of concerns. Number one, I've been all over the Arctic. I've been to Leffingwell's Cabin. I worked in Prudhoe. And the first thing you notice in the land around Prudhoe is that there's more water than land in a lot of places. And I don't think there's a lot of water in Anwar. And you need a lot of water to drill. The other concern I have is that we're having basically a fire sale on leases. And everybody in the room there can remember the fight that went on to get development at Point Thompson. Exxon held those leases for decades. And going back to Hickel and following Hickel, people were trying to get that area developed. They just basically tied it up. And with all this leases going on, we're setting ourselves up. And I'm also wondering if there's a chance that Anwar in the tax bill is going to sink the tax bill. And if it does, I think Alaska should look at a new approach. And the approach I would propose is that if it does fail, we just go ahead and say,
let's make it a wilderness area. Give us 100% of revenues from gas hydrates that are offshore in the Arctic that are being developed by the Japanese. And let's use that to help develop the oil, especially the state oil that exists west of Prudhoe, which is where our best revenues are going to come from.
All right. Thanks so much, Mike, for your comments. There is a state sale tomorrow as well. North Slope area, some state waters in the Beaufort. Kara, are you hearing about interest in those areas?
Well, again, Lori.
That's right.
The companies
they're not going to tell you.
No, the companies are uber competitive. we are one industry, but the companies themselves, I think Alaskans need to remember, compete against each other.
Sure.
And so, just like oil price, we don't talk about amongst ourselves what companies are hedging on oil price. That would break antitrust, as would a discussion around whether you're going to participate in a lease sale and how much you're going to bid. It's a very very transparent process. The bids are opened in public. The amounts are announced publicly.
Yeah, we'll know tomorrow.
We will know tomorrow.
Right. And Lois, before you respond, I wanted to ask a question too about, is it known what it costs to do the sales themselves? I mean, how much surveying or investment has to be made up front to understand these areas and divide them up? And then if you're opening up areas, the entire amount, about half of NPRA, if they're not bid on, does the federal government actually stand to lose money based on what they had to put in up front?
I would answer that just very quickly, and Cara might add. It is, in effect, a subsidy to the industry. There is a lot of work that goes behind it, but that's, you know, the job at this point of those in the federal and state governments. But I would like to remind people, because this isn't something that a lot of people are paying attention to, the flow through the Trans-Alaska Pipeline has been increasing since 2015. The DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, expects it to continue increasing for the next decade. We are not struggling. There's no reason to open up these very, very sensitive, special areas, whether it's the Arctic Refuge or the areas around Teshapuck Lake, when the areas that are open, the areas that you're not going to find this level of controversy, are producing. And that's you know, as an Alaskan, that's actually something that I think we all could agree on, rather than trying to go for an extreme agenda of opening all areas now because maybe there's a political alignment that wants to do that. Over the long run, this is not going to be a legacy that I think Alaska is going to be proud of, that we took a refuge and turned it into basically an industrial area for short-term gain.
Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Terry is in Valdez. Hi, Terry.
Hello. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, ANWR, it sets a very bad precedent. The population of the Earth is growing by like 200 million people a year, and every year the value is its vast wilderness areas. We're developing the rest of the world, and the world is coming to us to see what it used to be like. And we go start developing our wildlands. And I mean, it sets the precedence for the Wrangells, which has huge mineral wealth. The Pebble Mine is a good example of how short-term gains against long-term loss are the way we're developing Alaska. We're going to lose the greatest asset we've got. When Yellowstone was created, it was a laughingstock because who would ever go out there to see it? And you look at it now. I mean, our wilderness is our greatest economic engine, and it's a renewable resource. And I'll get off the line. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's stay with the phones for just a moment and go to Sitka. Matt is in Sitka. Hello.
Hello. My hand fell asleep holding the phone. I wanted to talk about price of oil. I got a call in to the commissioner when he was on last month, and I'm a little confused. I think the Alaska crude now is somewhere around $61 a barrel. And it's been there pretty much all winter, and the oil producers have just agreed to extend their their production caps for another 6 months. I don't know how long that's going to be continuing on. I suspect they might continue it another 6 months afterwards. But
you're talking about the OPEC producers, right?
I'm not sure if it's OPEC, included Russia, but the oil producers, and this was just 2 days ago or something. So when the governor was elected, it was $27 a barrel, and he built the budget, he said, on $40 a barrel. And here we are at $61 a barrel, and somebody just said that the production is increasing. Why are we not here in the hinterlands of Alaska seeing a little relief on the budget deficit in the state because of this better price? And can you guys talk about that? You did say that it's not going to go higher between $50 or $60 a barrel, but it's been higher than $60 all winter, and it looks like it might stay there for some time. I'm just confused about it.
All right.
Well, I think I'll take a stab at that, and to also address a couple other points. You know, Lois is right. Best kept secret in Alaska, we've had 2 years of increased production, and forecasts is we're going to have a third. And they're 1 to 2% increases, which is a huge win over a historical 4 to 6, sometimes 8% decline. We have not seen a consecutive year increases in production since the peak in 1989. But the reality is we're talking about 540,000 barrels a day, 550,000 barrels a day. We're not talking about the peak of 2 million in 1989. So when we talk about needing these new areas to develop, it's to make sure that we can continue to meet that demand 10 to 15 to 20 years from now. Production from some of these areas would not happen overnight. You know, the MPRA lease sale tomorrow, that is arguably more of a near-term solution to continue to meet not only Alaska's economy's demand, but also the global demand. So back to one of the previous callers about why are we still using oil and gas, the reality is the demand is still there. The Energy Information Administration has put out their forecast, and in 2050, so 30-plus years from now, hopefully I'm still not on Talk of Alaska in 30-plus years, is that I'll be a listener and calling in. They are forecasting that in 2050, 57% of the globe's energy is still going to come from oil and gas. Coal is another 20%. Renewables are increasing, but even by 2050, it's forecasted to be about 18% of the globe's energy source. So the reality is you have to plan for the long term. You have to plan so that we can have a 40-year future after we've had 40 years of success. And so, you know, why are we continuing to look at some of these areas? It's for that reason, to meet the global demand and to keep Alaska's economy strong.
A longer term look at it. Lois Epstein.
I think we all know as Alaskans that climate change is affecting the state in many ways. In terms of coastal communities, we're going to need some help to deal with that. But if we go forward and not do what we can to address climate change, and that would include, in my view, continuing to protect special areas, doing development in places that are open, like the state lands, use new technology to increase the throughput through the pipeline. That's okay. You know, the rest of the country is not going to look very favorably at Alaska when we go and ask for help because we need some money to deal with climate change if we haven't addressed it as best we can here. And that means not opening a new area where we're going to be invested in keeping the oil production there for many decades.
All right. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll take more of our callers online and more questions as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska is now through Friday, December 15th. Enrollment assistance is available and it's free. Visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are going to quickly go to the phones again. Vince is in Anchorage. Hi, Vince.
Hi. How are you guys doing today?
Good. Did you have a question?
I did. Well, first of all, I want to just weigh in real quick on the tax proposal that's being proposed in Congress. I think it's a tragedy on the American people. The only silver lining I see on it, from my perspective, is the ANWR provision. And I do agree with Kara and have seen lots of polling over the years that shows that I think 70% plus of Alaskans definitely support that project. But what I wanted to talk about was the gas line project. And on the preamble to the show, I was disappointed in how it was phrased, saying that it doesn't appear to be economically viable. But last night on the House Resources Committee had a meeting, a hearing, and Keith Meyer, the head of the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, went through a whole presentation, and a couple of the House minority members, Reps Birch and Sadler and Pruitt in particular, kept trying to bat down a lot of the assumptions, and I thought, you know, Mr. Meyer did a great job of making the case why it is economic. And then it's probably the biggest project probably in the history of North America construction-wise. And the Chinese obviously have a mandate to get off of coal and to get to cleaner burning fuels. And we have, for the first time that I've ever seen, the two biggest economies and their leaders in the world watching a signing ceremony, committing to a relationship to bring that project to fruition. So I'm just a little curious. I'd like to hear you talk about, from my perspective, this is a project that would do all kinds of things to help get our fiscal path in order, as well as create tons of jobs. And I've got tens of thousands of our members that are dying to go to work on this project. And this is the first time it's ever felt real to me in all the various iterations of gas line project proposals that I've been to. And I think this one's going to happen, and okay, that we ought to be doing all we can to make sure that we get it going.
All right. Thanks, Vince, for the call. And what I did say was the price for LNG will not pencil out in the near future. That was my qualifier in that statement.
Sure.
Kara, do you want to comment on that? And then Lois.
Hi, Vince. How are you? Thanks. Thanks for calling in. I was at the hearing last night, and I've heard the presentation now a couple of times. And I think, you know, I'm not going to comment specifically. I think there has been some concern that industry needs to be part of the partners along with the Gas Line Development Corporation and potential customers and investors, because we would be the suppliers. So I think that that's a pretty reasonable expectation. And I think AGDC is trying to make sure that it is an economical project. And as soon as we see some firm commitments and signed contracts beyond the promising memorandums of understanding that we have today, I think that that's a great sign. And I think that, you know, Alaska has shown we can be a leader in constructing world-class projects. I think we do have an Alaska workforce that Vince represents many members of, that industry works very closely with, as well as the coal industry. All of those workers, a lot of those workers at Usabeli are actually Teamsters. And so I think that we have an Alaska contracting community and Alaska workers who absolutely have to be a key component to making sure a massive project like that is successful. And we are hopeful that the work that AGDC will do over the next 12 months produces those actual signed contracts for the future of this project.
Lois, what are your thoughts about the gas line project generally? Are you supportive of this?
So as an engineer, I think pipelines are going to be around, and I'd rather see natural gas produce than oil because it, from a climate change perspective. I'm not going to be speaking for the whole conservation community, but I would say in general, the conservation community has not been actively opposing this. So unlike, you know, how we're sometimes characterized that all environmentalists hate all projects, that's not where I come from. And, you know, we have natural gas on the North Slope and it should be used. Far better option than some of the things we've been talking about in terms of taking intact ecosystems and on the coastal plain or near Teshepic Lake and going after the oil there.
All right. We only have a couple of minutes left, so I regret that we aren't going to get to a whole bunch of calls that folks are waiting online. Thank you so much for attempting to participate this morning. And I want to get a question in from an email. A listener sent in a question about the Ambler Road. This is kind of out of left field here, but we know that that's in public comment right now. The idea is that this would access minerals and copper. And this person is, Kendra, is expressing concern about this idea of it going in, the road itself. Lois, we only have a minute or so
sure.
left.
Well, we talked just very briefly about subsidies for the industry, and this is absolutely a subsidy for the mining industry, which pays very little taxes in Alaska. What it would be is over $1 billion in cost to the state, and that means you're talking about not just construction, but operations and maintenance. Financing, it costs a lot to borrow the money to actually fund this up front. And there's an enormous amount of interior opposition to this, and that needs to be listened to by the state because it really would transform the region.
All right. I want to get one caller in here from Gustavus. Hello, Judy.
Yes.
Can you quickly tell us what your comment is? We're about out of time.
Yes. I want to know where they got the information that all the people in Alaska want this development on the Arctic Refuge. And that the people who live up there all want it, too. I want to know where this information comes from.
So, Judy, this is Kara. There have been statewide polling done for at least 25 years. The track may actually be longer than that. And so the polling is by phone survey of registered voters in Alaska. And as far as the local support, there's a new webpage called Voice of the Inupiaq that has listed the local support in the refuge. And so I think those are the two sources I would point to.
Clearly, there's a lot of interest in this topic, and I think we're going to have you both come back and continue this conversation because there's quite a bit of interest both on the phone. We have a number of emails that have come in, and we just can't get to it. Thanks to my guests, Kara Moriarty and Lois Epstein. Thanks to Dave Waldron and Wesley Early on phones. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
If you're a single person who makes less than $60,240 per year, you're eligible for federal tax credits to help pay health insurance premium costs. If you need health insurance for 2018, there's a limited window to act. Open enrollment for 2018 plans is from November 1st through December 15th of 2017. If you don't have coverage, it could be financially devastating. Sign up at healthcare.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
Support for public radio comes from the communities we serve. Whether you give as an individual member or through your business, know that your contribution makes possible programming that informs, inspires, and entertains. We thank you for the role you play in your public radio station. This program is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400. This is Alaska Public Media.